Welcome back to Shatteringness. We're talking about God's prediction that Damascus would fall, becoming a twisted heap of rubble, and that they would bring this upon themselves through their own corruption. And we have Nikolai having called in from Wisconsin. How are you, Nick?
I'm good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm great. By the way, we're going to honor a commitment we made to you the last time we talked. If you recall, you wanted a more comprehensive presentation of circumcision as an element, condition of the covenant. And not only did I do a number of programs on the conditions of the covenant, concluding with circumcision, but on Monday or Tuesday of next week, early next week, James Bowen, who has done a series on circumcision in the past, is going to present about 4 hours of information on what it represents, the arguments for it, the arguments against it, what God has to say about participation in the covenant, about participation in Passover and entry into heaven regarding circumcision.
I have listened to all of them, and I understood why do we need the circumcision, and I no longer have a need to explain me why. You did really good job on your series of circumcisions and stuff. Oh, however, I have different questions.
Okay, but just so that you know, we are going to because there's other people. This is a big issue. This is the issue that really divides Paul from God. It's the argument that Paul foisted against the Torah is circumcision. So since it's an important issue for many people. Well, I'm delighted that you understand, and thank you. That's wonderful. There are other. That was a good question, and so we are going to let James do a. It's about 4 or 5 hours, just focused on circumcision. It'll happen early next week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that said, you have another question.
So, I mean, I have like several of them. I don't know if the hour would be enough. But the first one, from walking away from Babylon,
mm-hmm.
That means walking away from your family, too?
Yeah, I'm going to state precisely what God said, and then let's talk about what he meant by it. First, he asks us to walk away from our country to participate in the covenant. And the country specifically is Babylon. And the reason that it's Babylon only existed for a very short period of time, actually, as a nation. But what it represents is what God goes to great lengths to describe as the confluence of religion, politics, and militarism. And it's God does not want us dependent upon and beholden to our country religiously, politically, patriotically, or militarily. So that's what the first thing he says, walk away from. Then he says from your relatives. Now, what he's talking about here in the relatives is societal customs. You know, we with our relatives really embrace most of our societal customs, and most of those societal customs are based on religion and politics or militarism. You know, a celebration of a military victory, a celebration of a political birthday, a celebration of a religious holiday. And so God says, I want you to walk away from that. And then the last thing he says is from your father's home. And so that's where your question is. And let me turn forward into the book of Bereshith, Genesis, to help provide an answer. What God is saying is initially described between Adam and Chawa when he was presenting them as husband and wife. And what he said is that in this way, men and women, as husband and wife, becoming mother and father, would leave their father's house and form their own home. And what God is trying to explain here is that if we wish to become members of His covenant, that we've got to be willing to embrace our Heavenly Father and spiritual mother and God's family. And sometimes that means walking away from our earthly parents. In some cases, it's easy. Like my father was very mean, and so it's easy. He was anti-Semitic.
So then, it's okay. Is it okay to have a wife that really doesn't like any religion at all, anything at all? I mean, it's just for the same reason I did. I suppose.
Yeah.
And nothing at all. Yet she's okay with closing her eyes in terms of questions cannot be that questions cannot be answered by that evolution theory.
Right.
Would that be okay to have that wife, or do we need to walk away from
that? Yeah, no. God is never asking you to walk away from your wife, or women to walk away from your husbands. Now, that said, God does make it easy. In the sense of he doesn't want you married to someone who is abusive or difficult to be with. You know, divorce in the Torah is simply writing down, I don't want to be married to this individual anymore.
No, we like each other, and we share most of the, I'm enjoying arguing with her.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that answer. And by the way, I'm delighted that you have that kind of relationship with your wife. It's very few men really get to enjoy a relationship with a wife that will wrestle with you on the big issues, and that you can still enjoy that kind of dialogue. I have it with my wife. We get along on most everything, but we occasionally wrestle on issues, and it's kind of fun to do so. And we still come out loving one another. God is very different than the religious perspective. You know, in religions, they always tell people to marry within their religion, except a Muslim. Of course, man can marry a non-Muslim woman, although a Muslim woman can't marry a non-Muslim man. God doesn't say that you can only marry someone who agrees with him or agrees with you. So you're free to choose to marry and to stay married to whomever you want. Your responsibility, once you come to embrace Yahweh and come to know him and agree to participate in his covenant, is do the best you can to share what you have learned with your children.
Okay, well, two more questions. I know we can keep on talking about this particular topic for the rest of the hour, but two more, and I'll be on my way.
Okay.
You said that after death, death, we will become light-based energy type of beings, aren't we? That's what you said, right?
Correct.
Now, I remember that in one of your previous, not statements, but radio shows, that you called Hesatan being a light being.
Correct. That's correct.
So, I mean, would we become just like him?
No.
Yes
and no.
From the light and from the light, doesn't really.
Yeah.
What am I missing here?
Yeah, good question. Not very much. It really is a good question. First of all, the only people, souls, who are transformed or empowered from being mortal and physical to energy-based, light-based, are those who embrace the covenant. And that's Yahweh's way of empowering us and enriching us, is we become like him and we become like light, as opposed to being trapped in physical bodies. Now, there are another group of people who are going to be viewed similarly, and those who have worked in opposition with God. Now, the difference between the Moloch, and Satan is a Moloch. It's a messenger, and he's got a group of Moloch who sided with him and disunited themselves from Yahweh.
The messenger is Moloch. I mean, the Satan.
He was created as one of Yahweh's messengers, and he chose to rebel. The story is that he did not like the fact that God was spending all of this time with man, And there is a difference between man and the Malach. And that is that these Malach, these spiritual messengers, these spiritual implements or beings, do not live under the auspices of free will. Now, I just said choice, and they don't live under the auspices of free will, where we do. What that means, if you don't have free will, so like in the military, you don't have free will, you have to follow orders. The Malach that Yahweh created were simply tools. And if the tool says, you know, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to rebel against that, then the tool is discarded. And that's the case of Satan and those who chose to side with him. They were implements without free will. They don't get a choice in the matter. They decided that they were not going to go along. They didn't want to be used as a implement or messenger or tool anymore. And so they were discarded. Now, by being discarded, though, as a light-based being, they can't be destroyed. So the tool can be discarded, but it can't be destroyed. Light is eternal. Light cannot be destroyed. All you can do with a light-based being that is discarded is to incarcerate it. And so that's the reason that Sheol exists, and Sheol is presented like a black hole where light cannot escape. And so a spiritual being like Hasatan that was created without free will, that chose to not be used as a implement, was discarded and will be forever incarcerated in a black hole. Now, the reason we differ is that although we are going to become light-based beings too, is that we're light-based beings with free will. And with free will, we can love, we can interact, we can grow, we can...
I see the difference, but why is he, if he's in Sheol and even light particles cannot escape it, how come his message is still alive, and how come he's still able to manipulate certain people?
Good question. He's actually not in Sheol now. He can go into Sheol, but he doesn't spend his time in Sheol now. He has not been incarcerated in what you would call the black hole. He has been discarded, but he is still very much active, as are his fellow demons on Earth.
So one more question.
He will be incarcerated forever. First for 1,000 years, and I'll tell you, we'll talk about when that will happen, and then forever. But both of those are on our horizon. We'll talk about those and then address another question. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back with Nikolai in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Nick. And before we move on to the next question, Nick, so that you know the timing of things, the Hasatan, and whose name is Halel ben Shakar. Hasatan means the adversary. It's a title. He's called Lord primarily by God. When he had his conniption fit and decided he didn't want to play along anymore, right at the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the Garden of Eden. He played a role in that. That was just shy of 6,000 years ago. And he has been free to pester people and mislead people on Earth, therefore to make the choice of whether or not you want to participate in the covenant legitimate for all of the past 6,000 years. When Yahweh returns in year 6,000 Yah, which will be on October 2nd, 2033, Hasatan is going to be, and his fellow demons are going to be locked up for 1,000 years. They will go into an incarceration facility of some kind for 1,000 years. They will be let out briefly at the end of that 1,000 years, and the reason for that is that there will be people born during this 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah that need to be confronted with a genuine choice. There really has to be an alternative other than to embrace Yahweh for choice to be real. And so he's going to be let out ever so briefly and then incarcerated for all eternity thereafter. So that's the timing of things. You had another question?
Yes. So another thing I'm having troubles with, I'm going to employ my strategy right now.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So let's say you're a teacher. You're trying to be at least.
Mm-hmm.
and you're at the school. Mm-hmm. While school is being owned by Yahweh, and mm-hmm. all the books are written by Yahweh, you're mm-hmm. the one who's trying to teach his word. Mm-hmm. And you're the one who learning from him, too. Mm-hmm. So, once my line of thought is splitting over here, so I'll go in one side first. So, let's say when you're light-based, and you have mm-hmm. learned, I think me and you were there once at that. If you write there after your death, you're with the Yahweh and you're mm-hmm. learning everything from him and you know everything mm-hmm. he knows now. Now you can do, I mean, the point of receiving knowledge, not just to be smart, but to mm-hmm. be able to implement knowledge, to right. have a chance right. to do things mm-hmm. you learn. So, I mean, while Yahweh did create this universe, would it be not okay for you to create your own universe, maybe a smaller version or even a bigger version, or implement something other than time being in mm-hmm. your own universe? I mean, my own assumption that you will be able to present it with all those chances and abilities and uh-huh. you know, and so if you, once you do create your universe, create things, and since you said that there is no time out there, and so you could very much already have your universe there while I'm here live and talking, or while my kids, for example, mm-hmm. would be here talking to someone else other than you over here. Why wouldn't that be okay for that person from that light being to come across to a different universe to say, hey, I can do the same. Hey, I can create. I'm not exactly calling himself a god, but saying, hey, I know this and that, and I can benefit you with the knowledge. Please join me. See, here's the thing. If I would join that person, that wouldn't mean somehow escaping the school. I'm just joining your class. Yeah. I'm still under Yahweh umbrella, mm-hmm. under learning everything that Yahweh taught.
Okay.
That light
right.
being...
Right, right. Sure. This is quite a hypothetical that you're presenting, but let me tell you what we know, because I can't answer any hypothetical that exists beyond what we have been told, without just getting into dueling opinions here. God said that he created this current universe that we are we're in, and he gave us the timeline of when he created it, and he's also given us the timeline of when he's going to destroy the current universe that we're in. And then he says that we're going to be witnesses when he creates a second universe, a completely new universe that we get to explore. Now, we'll return to that thought and what it means to your hypothetical in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Nick has presented a hypothetical where in eternity, since we're going to know what God knows, and we might be able to create our own universe and then influence our own universe. So all we're told, Nick, is that there is a present universe which is going to cease to exist. Now, do you know why, by the way, that God has to destroy this universe and allow those who have participated in the covenant to witness the creation of a new universe?
Suppose that it goes as a reward for those who made the right choice?
Well, it is, but the reason that he can't just allow us to spend an eternity in this existing universe is because as a light-based being, we will be able to maneuver in time. And therefore, we would be able to go back and to witness our own past and the human past where we were so vicious to one another, we made a lot of dumb mistakes, and it would be painful to witness that which is better forgotten. And so
isn't there already light beings up there over there with him, the ones who did embrace or the ones who do
yes.
that? And aren't they able to view past right now, right there.
Yeah, so, you would certainly think so, but I think God has the capacity to restrict certain actions. You know, what he's told us is that when he returns, he is going to write his teaching, his guidance inside of us. So we're going to have the Creator's operating manual inside of us for what things are conducive, what things are not conducive, what things, you know, what kind of things will get us into trouble in terms of like, for example, should we go off and explore a black hole? Probably not. You know, you don't want to get beyond the event horizon. He's going to give us some guidance in this regard. My guess is that the guidance that he has given those who are already spiritual beings with him in heaven is don't do the following things. You know, you go off and explore the universe, but don't do the following things. Now, as it relates to creating a third universe, if you will, where some of the Covenant's children think, hey, well, we've got all this power now and all this knowledge, let's go create another universe. I think we're assuming some things that may not be valid. One is that, and the first primary is, even though we're going to be enormously empowered making this transition from being mortal and being physical to being energy-based and immortal, and we're going to be a great deal more like God as his children, we're not going to have all of God's power. And the power and the energy necessary to create a universe is extraordinary. And so I don't think that we're going to individually have that kind of power.
Well, absolutely, you're right. We will not have all power just like
right.
God does.
Right.
But as from your words, as we grow, God grows. So
correct.
When you grow
right.
not just
right. Yes. Yeah, we're going to grow.
You grow
absolutely.
With the power. Your powers grow too, though.
Right. Absolutely. We're going. We will become hugely more powerful. Powerful enough to create our own universe and to conceive life in that universe and then influence life in that universe. I don't think we will become that powerful. Also, in terms of knowledge, well, we're going to constantly be exploring this new universe that God is going to create together with him and camping out together and enjoying it. I think where our understanding will constantly grow and expand, I don't expect that we will ever come to know as much as he knows. I think we will come to know more than we can possibly imagine now. But to both know enough to create a universe and then life within it, and then influence that life within it, and then also to have the power to do it, I think that's the place where your hypothetical unravels. I don't think we reach there. But then let's just say we did. Let's, for argument's sake, let's say that we did. As God's children and having learned from him and having learned the way that he went about making it possible for us to spend an eternity with him, where he himself made the sacrifice, you know, I'm not so sure that I want to sign up for that. You know, I'm glad that he did. But, man, I can't imagine saying, you know, I'm going to replicate what he did and make the sacrifice necessary to.
Well, I'm not talking about replicating. If he created something already in the way it is,
mm-hmm.
I'm not really looking forward to copying
yeah.
what he did once already. If I will learn and if I do things, I'm gonna create something. I don't think he doesn't expect, or
yeah.
isn't that how how the kids learn? They go out in the real world and they try to hit themselves with the stick up and they, oh, well, it
yeah.
hurt.
Yeah.
Or they get the, or back in time when they finally got the fire
yeah.
going and then, oh, hey,
right. yeah.
that tastes good. So, I mean, that's where I will be trying to create,
yeah.
not replicate.
Okay.
And I believe that will benefit me and the God.
Yeah, yeah. I think that being able to experiment is part of our journey together and try new things and develop new things and experiment with things is absolutely part of what you would expect in a father-son relationship. camping out with God for all eternity. Now, the place where I was with you and I was concerned that in my experimentation, because I'm pretty rebellious and I'm pretty much willing to jump before I look sometimes sort of a fellow. And you may be as well and have an impulsive personality. I was actually a little concerned that I would do something stupid with all of this freedom and with all of this power and with all of this knowledge in eternity. And it's why I became so comfortable with it once I recognized what Torah really means. When Yahweh says when he returns and we're empowered on this journey, Nick, that he's going to write his instructions, his guidance inside of us, then at that point, you know, I'm pretty comfortable that we're going to be able to exercise free will and to conduct these experiments, but with a knowledge of, all right, this is a good idea, that's a really bad idea. So I think there'll be some guidelines, if you will, that will keep us from doing something really stupid while we go off and explore and experiment. All right, so I think it's the best of all worlds.
Well, good, awesome. Well, the first question from the beginning statement was, why wouldn't that be okay from the point of view from when you create something to not actually recruit, I would say, new beings, new people, new light beings in your circle versus letting them to join the main, it's not like they will go against Yahweh. They're just gonna help me first before they do help Yahweh. And in reality, everyone benefits.
I do think, Nick, that we will have the opportunity to experiment with life forms in eternity. I can't imagine an eternity without life forms and us interacting with those life forms. So that part of what you're describing, I see is very real, is extraordinarily likely. In fact, into the 99.99% likelihood that we're going to be able to interact with other living beings in eternity. The question then, because it becomes, is God going to create or allow us to somehow engage with a being with not just a soul or not just with a consciousness, but also with a nesama that is capable of understanding and relating to God?
This is where my question comes handy, because I'm thinking that he does, and they're doing it right now, and that's what the spiritualist is about. Yeah. They don't say Yahweh bad or anyone else is bad. They just say, I'm good. Please come and join me.
Yeah, I don't think so, though. I think all of that spiritualism that the people do, and soothsaying and predicting and palm reading and all of that sort of stuff and communicating with other spirits, my guess is that 99.999% of that is in association with the fallen spirits of Hasatan and his demons and has nothing to do with God.
And that is why we have a Nosoma to find that 0.0001%
of the one product. I'd be really careful there. I think the more you focus on what Yahweh said in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and study what he has provided, the better off you're going to be. I wouldn't invest a lot of time trying to discern if there is a spiritualist out there that is actually connected to Yahweh spirit as opposed to the adversary spirit, because God, boy, he has a lot of really condemning things to say about spiritualism.
Okay,
so just be careful.
All right, Nick,
I'd love talking with you, and I encourage you to call in more frequently. I am quite positive there's a lot of people that enjoyed this discussion.
Okay, well, I'll hang up, and I'll let you Put a few more words about the Yahweh.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. We've come a long way together.
Okay.
At this point, we have Glenn, who has called back. I hope we have a little bit better connection. Glenn, yeah, my guess is that you, since you are a guy that likes to be pertinent with what we're talking about, my guess is that there was something that either I said or that Nick said that you wanted to respond to. Am I right?
Well, many people might have been interested. Some of us are squirming and screaming.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Limit setting. I once called in your show and when there was a lot of speculation going on about the nature of Sheol. And I stated at the time that to me the important thing about Sheol is that the presence of Yahweh is not there and it's exceedingly unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, in this case about heaven, I would say the pertinent thing is that the presence of Yahweh is there, and it's exceedingly pleasant, and I'm pretty content with that. You know, if Yahushua says, "Behold, I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, ye may be also."
Yeah.
And also, I have not seen or hath ear heard, nor has it entered into the mind of men what God has prepared, what Yahweh has prepared for those who love him or are called according to his purpose. That's good enough for me.
It's good enough for me, too. It is good enough for me. So stay with us, because in the last segment, since you were concerned about, I'm assuming the statements where I spoke of limits, let's talk a little bit about limits and whether or not there should be or have to be some limits on our experience in eternity. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have taken a bit of a departure into what heaven is going to be like. Glenn has called back in, and Glenn's comment is essentially the same as my own. God explains that being in heaven will be with him, and we have come to love him, so that's good enough for us. But I'm still curious. Other people are curious as to what we're going to be doing in eternity. So it's kind of fun to talk about camping out and exploring in this transition between energy and matter when it behooves us to slow down and be stuck in time and to, you know, enjoy a good wine and a good meal and a good song and a lovely campfire or a nice stream, to take on the material form again and then to go off and become energy again and go and fly across the universe.
Well, I would point out that Yahweh is transcendent of all the time, space, matter, energy, and dimensionality he creates.
Correct.
We are not. We have beginnings. He has no beginnings. So I would suggest that at least in that sense, we are somehow eternally time bound, you know.
We
have a beginning. We can never not have a beginning.
Right, and that also means that he is going to be infinitely more powerful and infinitely more knowledgeable than we are. And even as we our knowledge grows exponentially and our power grows exponentially, we're still not going to be at the same level that he is, nor would I want to be. I wouldn't want that responsibility.
Bingo. That's why, like, I work with brain-injured children, and I've also interacted with genius-level doctors, and I'm somewhere in between, and I don't thrash against that.
It's the way it is. I'm very comfortable, in fact, extraordinarily comfortable, recognizing that we're going to be tremendously empowered, but not responsible. I mean, it's kind of the best of all worlds. We got Dad, who is the ultimate authority, has ultimate responsibility, got it all under control, knows exactly what needs to be done, and is giving us this huge universe to go play in. And then going to give us the instructions as to how to play in that universe to get the most out of it. Seems like a win-win scenario for me. I do think there's going to be some limits, though. And by limits, you know, in any home, in any family, there need to be a few limits just so that, you know, things don't go awry.
I definitely believe we're very severely limited as creatures, and I don't see this growing exponentially thing going on. But, and especially at 20, because you're an adventurer, I would surmise.
Yes.
I'm much more, and I've done adventuring. Now, if you're a person who loves his or her spouse or family, say you have to go away on a business trip to someplace beautiful and exotic.
Yes.
But your loved ones aren't there. you'd rather be home in your humble home. There's a point at which, you know, you've had travel fatigue, trip fatigue, road. You just want to be with the ones you love and hang out. So that's why, you know, and me being a homebody, I'm happy to be with those I love and pet the dog and just hang out. It's fine with me.
I'm where you are, and also an adventurer. I love to, and I've been in 150 countries around the world, and I have engaged in so many wonderful, exciting adventures. But I can tell you that when you're doing it alone and you're not sharing that adventure with someone you love, it isn't nearly as fun as it is doing it together. But I always love just coming home and being part of a family. I'm bi-coastal, and my wife is spending more time on the east, and I'm spending a little more time on the west because we're trying to sell both houses so that we can be closer to our sons, because these houses are on the opposite coast, and so it behooves us to be to manage both properties so that both properties can be effectively marketed. But my wife is just flown across the country. We're going to be back together here in about an hour, and I can't wait to see her. So, being together and family, and next week, I'm not going to be here. We're going to have guests all week and guest hosts, and I can't wait to spend the time with my family. And I get the best of both worlds. Next week, I get to go to an exotic place and have my family.
Well, there you go. That's like over the top.
Yeah, that's what heaven's going to be like, though. That's exactly what I'm expecting heaven to be like.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, I'm thinking of a psalm where the writer says he wants to be a pillar in the temple of God. Pillars don't go anywhere. He just wants to be in the presence. His greatest aspiration is to be in the presence of Yahweh.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good.
What I care about most.
Yeah, I want to be in the presence, but I want us to go off and do stuff together. I like doing stuff, and so a little bit of both is going to be a wonderful experience. Yep. Hey, Glenn, thank you. Two great calls today. I appreciate you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.